You remember in the basement? Mantava.
So the Levim would sing a special Shir Shalyom. That's what we recite every morning in the davening. Shir Shalyom HaYomrim. And on Shabbos, they would sing a different Shir Shalyom at the time of the Nisach HaYayin of the Tamid Shal Shachar, and a different Shir Shalyom at the time of the Nisach HaYayin of the Musafim. So the Tamid Shal Shachar, they said, Mizmer Shel Yom HaShabbos. And the shir that they sang at the time of the Nisach HaYayin of the Karbanos HaMusafim, the Gemara records, was Shiras HaAzinu. HaAzinu. All the other Shir Shalyoms all come from Tehillim. Every Shir Shalyom is from Tehillim. Every Yantif, every day Chol HaMoed was a different Shir Shalyom. Wasn't the regular Shir Shalyom for a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Yantif had a different Shir Shalyom, Chol HaMoed had a different. At Shabbos, they divided HaAzinu into six sections. HaAzinu is a Shira, it's a poem. So you have to read it in six different sections. The first Shabbos they would recite, the Levim would sing the first section. The second Shabbos they would sing the second section at the time of Nisach HaYayin of the Musaf. The third Shabbos the third section. After 6 weeks, on the seventh week, they would go back to the beginning and sing again the first section of HaAzinu. And the Gemara tells us that the Rashi Tevis, to know where these stanzas begin, is Haziv Lach. Hey Zayin Yud Vav Lamed Chav. Haziv Lach. So the first one is HaAzinu. HaAzinu starts with the Hey. The second stanza starts Achoyim Aysalam. The later stanzas, the fourth and the fifth and the sixth, they're different traditions. If you look in the commentaries on the Gemara in the end of Maseches Rosh Hashanah, so Rashi and Taisvis and the Rabbeinu Hananel have different versions as to what exactly is the correct breakdown of HaAzinu, and the Gemara says that this is relevant for us. Kishem Shechalukim beBeis HaMikdosh, the same way they divided HaAzinu in the Beis HaMikdosh, that's how we should divide it beBeis HaKnesses. When we lay on Shabbos, Parshas HaAzinu, we're supposed to stop in those correct places. If you recite a poem and you stop in the wrong place, so you kill the whole poem. HaAzinu is supposed to be a poem. It's not supposed to be read as psukim. The rest of the Chumash is read as psukim. So you just stop wherever you want. You just can't stop within three psukim to a psucha or a stuma, and so on. But basically, you read the rest of the Chumash as psukim. HaAzinu has to be read in the Beis HaKnesses. The Kriyas HaTorah has to be as a poem. So you have to stop. Sheni, Shlishi, Chamishi has to be in the right place. So, Samsino printed their Chumash, and there was Sfardim. So they put in the Sfardish tradition from the Rabbeinu Hananel. What is the correct way to divide up this poem of HaAzinu? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the earlier poskim, Nahara, Nahara, Upashte, which means every community should follow its own tradition. The river Nahar, the Nahar has different tributaries. The river flows on, and sometimes it flows to the right, and sometimes it flows to the left. That's an expression that appears in the Talmud that means that every community follows its own tradition. So Ashkenazim really should follow the tradition of Rashi. Rashi set up most of the Psokim and Minhagim for Ashkenaz. And most of the Chumashim have to have Sokis for HaAzinu. Based on the Sansino edition, most of the Chumashim follow the original printed Chumash. That was the Sansino that has the Sfardish Hapsokas. I live in Washington Heights, so there the people remember that years ago, Rabbi Breuer would always get up on Shabbos HaAzinu, and he would make a sign that the Balkari should stop in a different place. That they follow Minig Ashkenaz, and they don't follow the Hapsokas that are printed in the Chumash. Everybody does Haziv Lach. The only thing is, the question is which Haziv Lach, which psukim are the beginning of the stanzas. There is a quirk in the Sansino edition of Tehillim. have a lot of prokim and tehillim that begin with a koteret, with an introduction that has no content. Amatzeach al hashminis mizmor David. It doesn't say anything. So in Sansino's edition of Tehillim, they count the next pasuk as pasuk aleph. They don't count the first one as a pasuk. This is taka a discussion in the Pachad Yitzchok, Rabbi Yitzchok Laprenti's encyclopedia of halacha. He discusses the shaila. If a person took a neder to learn 10 psukim a day, does that first pasuk in the beginning of a perek in Tehillim, does that count as a pasuk? Or is that just an introduction to a pasuk? That doesn't count as a pasuk. So in Sansino edition of Tehillim, there is a quirk. Mizmashilu Yayma Shabbos is pasuk aleph. Tov l'hodos l'Hashem is pasuk beis. And every other perek in Tehillim that starts with a koteret, with an introduction, the koteret is not pasuk aleph. Pasuk aleph is the next pasuk. So this was tumbling by Rabbanim for many years, that it seems to be a contradiction in Sansino's edition. How do they have the Ruach HaKodesh to decide? Who made that decision? The Mizmah Shilei Yom HaShabbos counts as Pasuk Aleph, the Tov L'Hodos L'Hashem is Pasuk Beis, and every other Kapitel and Tillim that starts with an introduction, the introduction is not a Pasuk. So in the later years, in the 1800s, they quote that the Nachlas David thought that the Mishnah in Talmud seems to support this position of Sansino. Because it says, you don't say the David Mizma Lashem Haaretz Meloya. Pasuk begins with Lashem Haaretz Meloya. Second day, the third day, every Shir Shal Yom begins with the Pasuk. It leaves out the Koteret. Except for Mizma Shil Yom HaShabbos. That's considered the very first Pasuk of the Kapitel and the Tehillim.
Yeah, I have the card in. Thank you.
Yeah, but when I gave it to him, he created a new file. He hit the buttons. I know. Everyone has it wrong.
Or that Rabbi Gottlieb, formerly from Ireland, published two volumes of this Sfarno, a collection of his tshuvas and different writings, and of course his commentary on Chamish and Chumshi Torah, with introductions and with footnotes. Very beautiful job. He made the Sfarno more popular in recent years after he put out his new edition. So in the collection of Shailos HaTshuvas, I noticed two very fascinating tshuvas. One of them came up halacha lemaisa just the week, 2 days before I left to Italy. There was an Asik in Italy. A Kohen was married for years to a woman and he had children. And some woman started to tumult that the wife of the Kohen was a Grusha. So they investigated the case and it turned out that a Jewish girl was engaged to marry a Jewish boy, and then the boy became a Meshumet. So the girl said she's not going to marry a Meshumet. So there was a whole hassle. The boy insisted he wanted to marry her, and he was going to force her to marry him, and the girl's family insisted that no. They were only engaged. So they insisted that the fiancé should give her a get. Let me give a get. They weren't even married. So they wanted that she should officially have a get, that it should be clear that she has nothing to do with the Meshumet. So he gave her a get. So the din is that a Kohen is not permitted to marry a Grusha. But this is not called a Grusha. She was only engaged to this fellow. She was never married to him. So many Rabbanim said at that time, the Mishnah in Gittin has a Chumrah, that not only if a woman is really divorced, if a woman was actually married and she really needed a get, there's a din of reach get. If a man gave his wife something that smells like a get, a reach get, has the shmek of a get, so also a kohen is not allowed to marry such a woman. The Rambam writes that that's only a chumer midirabbanan, and others say no, that it's a real din menator, this reach get. So during the lifetime of this Sfarno, that was the early 1500s, There was a big machlekes. Many rabbanim said that the woman was not allowed to marry the kohen, and they have to get divorced because she had a reach haget, because the fiancé gave her a get. And the Sfarna, who was much bigger than all of these rabbis put together, he could put them all in his little pinky. So he said they're crazy. They don't know the ABC of halacha. That's not called the reach haget. The reach haget, they have to at least be married together. And then he gives a get that's not exactly 100% a kosher get. But if it's just a fiancé gives a get, he insisted it's not a reach haget. And in that tshuva, he complains about the fact that there were people who had smicha, who never deserved to get smicha in the first place, and they're issuing their opinion on many halachic matters, and they're not entitled to an opinion. They're not learned enough. He complains about the fact that people would give money in order to get smicha, and they weren't worthy. They didn't deserve the smicha. It's an issue that happens in our generation as well. The accepted opinion, of course, the way the Sfarno said, that that's not considered a reach haget. If they're just engaged and the fiancé gives a get, that's garnishment garnished. Then right before I left, I was involved in a dintura between a husband and a wife. They were married for a few years, and the wife insisted she can't stand the husband anymore. She wants the husband to give her a get. But the husband said he wants shalom bais. So I was sitting there. We had a bezna of three rabbanim. I was sitting and listening back and forth, back and forth. It was ridiculous. The woman said she's not going to go back to her husband. There's nothing to discuss. So this, I mentioned in the middle of the dintara that the Sfarno has a tshuva about the following case. A religious girl in Italy authorized her brother to clinch a shidduch on her behalf with a Jewish boy. So the brother had to go out of town to meet the boy. The girl had met him. And the brother agreed in the name of his sister that his sister is going to marry this boy. So then the sister backed out from the shidduch. They got engaged, and the sister backed out from the shidduch for no good reason. She doesn't want to marry him. So some of the rabbanim insisted we have to put the girl in cherem because she's backing out from the shidduch. So the Sfarno again complains. They had no right to give these people smicha. They don't know what they're talking about. They're not entitled to an opinion. He says, not only if the girl is engaged and she doesn't want to get married, you can't force her. Even if she's married already, she says, I don't want to live with my husband. You can't tie the woman up. She's not a prisoner of war. That's how the Rambam writes the expression. A Jewish girl is married, is not a prisoner of war. And certainly more so if she's not even married, she's only engaged. They said, of course she has a right to back out from the shidduch. The Sfarno was very respected during his lifetime as a big Talmid Chacham. The Maran Padua, whose kever we visited on Friday, published a collection of tshuvas. He has two tshuvas to the Sfarno, but he writes to him with the greatest respect. Several tshuvas of the Rambam Itanu, which have become more famous than others, many have a practice that started about then, the 1500s, 1600s, to fast every month on Erev Rosh Chodesh. It's called Yom Kippur Katan. Just like we fast on Yom Kippur and we pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that He should give us a healthy year, a good year, so too, the practice developed that we pray on Erev, you fast on Erev Rosh Chodesh and you pray that we should have a good month. So the Gemara has a din that it's not proper to fast on Erev Shabbos. Out of quote Shabbos, one should not enter Shabbos in a hungry state. Once in a while, a Sereb Tevis falls out on Shabbos, you have no choice, you have to fast. But let's say if a person has Yahrzeit on Friday, so the more correct practice is that you don't fast. And even when some of the other Tanaisim fall out on Friday, the opinion of Rabbi Akiva was in Maseches Erevin that you eat in the middle of, you eat towards the end of the day. We don't accept this. If Tisha B'Av would fall out on Friday, Rabbi Akiva would recommend you should eat towards the end of the day in order not to enter Shabbos in a hungry state. In a state of being starved. So the Ramam Ipanu recommended this new minig that they had, to fast on Erev Rosh Chodesh. So he said, just like it's not proper to fast on Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontif, a whole day long, so he said the same is true on Rosh Chodesh. You're not permitted to fast on Rosh Chodesh, and it's really not proper to fast on Erev Rosh Chodesh a whole day and enter into Leil Rosh Chodesh in a state of starvation. So his recommendation was that those who want to observe Yom Kippur Kotan, that's just when it had begun. At that time, his recommendation was that they should fast the Monday or Thursday before Rosh Chodesh, not on Erev Rosh Chodesh, some other time. During his lifetime, there was a big dispute about how to write tefillin, shel yad. And tefillin shel yad, you have to put all the four parshiyos on one klaf. Kadesh v'yoki v'yachor, shma v'hayoyim shamoa, all on one klaf. So in the Sefer Torah, we know there are different sedris. You have parshas Pinchas, parshas Matas, parshas Masei, and then within each sedra, within each parshas Hashavua, you have parshios. You have one paragraph, another paragraph, a third paragraph, a fourth paragraph. The paragraphs are separated from each other either with a psucha or with a stuma. It's understood that a psucha means that the first paragraph ends in the middle of the line, and then it's empty till the end of the line. And a stuma means the first paragraph ends in the middle of the line, and then you have a little pause, enough space to put nine letters, blank, you leave it blank, and the next paragraph begins on the same line at the end of the line. That's called a stuma. So the question is, when you write a Sefer Torah, there's no problems. We have a tradition. Every two paragraph, this is a psucha, this is a stuma, there's no problem. The problem comes up when you write Kadesh v'yoki v'yachor, and then you write Shema in v'hayoyim shomoa. So the psucha or the stuma, is that the correct way to begin a paragraph in the Torah, or is that the correct way to end the paragraph in the Torah? So usually it doesn't make a difference. What's the difference? You're writing a Sefer Torah. So you know every paragraph, this is a psucha, that's a stuma. But here, if V'yoki v'yachor ends with a stuma, and Shema is supposed to begin with a psucha, so which one wins? Is the psucha, the stuma, the correct way to end a parsha, or the correct way to begin a parsha? Because here you have a conflict. V'yoki v'yachor ends with one, ends with a stuma, and Shema begins with a psucha. So the Rambam writes that Shema, that Kadesh, V'yoki v'yachor, Shema, all three begin with a psucha. So the Rambam is clear that psucha versus stuma is the correct way to begin a paragraph. So the Rambam Ipanu says that's what we follow. We follow the Rambam's opinion that psuchas and stumas are the correct way to begin a parsha. And this is in disagreement with one of the contemporaries of his generation, who said, no, we should follow the Sefer. The Beis Yosef quotes the Rambam a lot, and he quotes later Svarim as well. So the Beis Yosef quotes from one of the later Svarim, who says the Psucha and Stuma is the correct way to conclude a parsha. So the Rambam Ipanu's opinion has been accepted, that we follow the Rambam here, that Psucha and Stuma is the correct way to begin a parsha, as opposed to the correct way to end a parsha. We don't accept the opinion of the Oil Moed.
Ashkenazi.
Our practice is that we only start reciting Slichas the Matzoi Shabbos before Rosh Hashanah. Unless Rosh Hashanah is so early in the week, then we start the Matzoi Shabbos before. So we say Slichas for a week and a half maximum. The Sfardim have the practice that they start reciting Slichas from Rosh Chodesh Elul on. So this is a big machlekes during the lifetime of the Rambam Ipanu. What do you mean? They start saying Slichas from Rosh Chodesh? They say the Slichas on Rosh Chodesh? Or they start saying Slichas the day after Rosh Chodesh? Just like we don't recite Slichas on Shabbos. So maybe just like Shabbos is not proper to recite Slichas, Rosh Chodesh also not proper. So that's what the Rambam Ipanu insisted. That they were all Svardim at that time. So the Sfardish and Minik, the recite Slichas from Rosh Chodesh on, means from the day after Rosh Chodesh, not from Rosh Chodesh itself. Rambam Ipanu has a tshuva that is not accepted regarding when you need, if you have a treifa pat, sometimes you need hagola to kasher it, and sometimes you require libun. Hagola means that you put it into burning hot water. You hold it there for a few seconds. And libel means you have to gli, ice the gli. You have to put burning hot fire, 950 degrees Fahrenheit, to kasha the gli. So how do you determine when do you need hagola, when do you need libun? So the Rambam Ipanu is very, very machmer in that area, and his opinion has not been accepted. We paskin, whenever you cook the soup, tray for soup, even if the treifa soup was a direct chazashmaltz, all you need is hagola. He was machmer in that case that you would need lipun. There's another famous tshuva Rambam Ipanu which is not accepted, also not accepted. He discusses the principle of miktus hayon kekuloi. We all know if someone is sitting shiva, so on the last day of shiva, the aveilim observe Avelis in the morning, and then we call it quits. We learn that sound from a pasuk in Chumash. Pasuk is not talking about Avelis. We learn that from a pasuk that there is a principle of Miktsas Hayom Kekulo. The same thing, the last day of Shloshim, one observes Avelis the morning of the 30th day, and then we call it quits, Miktsas Hayom Kekulo. So the Rambam Ipanu raises the question, what about a chasen, kala? So the Shivas Yimei HaMishteh, and the Chasan is not supposed to leave his wife alone. He's supposed to sit home the whole time. So can he call it quits the morning of the seventh day or not? So the Rambam Ipanu says you cannot apply Miktsas Hayom Kekuloi, and he comes up with his own new pasuk that when Yankev Avinu married first Leah, and then he found out that it was the wrong girl, then he married Rachel. So his father-in-law, our Elter Zeid Lavan, the Heilige Lavan, said, Malei Shvu Azos, Minitna Lecho Gam Azos. So the Lavan said, finish up the first week, Malei Shvu Azos. Finish up the first week, the Shivas Yimei HaMishteh of Leah, and then we'll let you marry Rachel. So he said, you see from that pasuk that you have to have a full 7 days, he can't apply Miktsas Hayom Kekulo. But what's the explanation? So the Rambam Ipanu has a Mechudesh Dika explanation which is not accepted. He thinks that when it comes to Dvarim Shel Simcha, Chasukala is an Inyan of Simcha, Shabbos Yontav is an Inyan of Kedusha. One should say every Shabbos morning, we'll observe Shabbos, we'll daven in Shul, and after Musaf, we'll call it quits, we'll go to work. Why don't you say Miktsas Hayom Kekulo on Shabbos, Miktsam Kekula on Yontif? This is his question. So the Rambam Ipanu answers, when it comes to Dvarim Shel Kedusha, when it comes to Simcha, we want to observe it to the maximum, and we want to be Mosef Mechoil Al HaKodesh. You want to have more. You don't want to cut down. When it comes to Inyonim of Avelis, sad things, or Tumah, by Azav and Azava, you're talking about Tumah. So then you say, Cherem, you put a person in Cherem. So that's an Inyan, that's a sad Inyan. So there the Gemara says, Miktsas Hayom Kekulo. So this explanation of the Rambam Ipanu is also not accepted, because the Gemara says, Beferish, that even though a Nazir acquires Kedusha, kadoshi hiye gadel peres arosha. The nazir has a temporary state of kedusha for 30 days, the time that he's a nazir. Nonetheless, we apply mikzvah sayam kukula to the nazir. The morning of the last day of the naziris, he can call it quits and he can bring his karbanos to the Beis HaMikdash. So you see that even in a davish abikdusha, you also apply mikzvah sayam kukula.
Napoleon schools.
There was a lot of intermarriage. It's well known that when Napoleon was waging his wars, and he was interested, his policy was, his platform was that he would give freedom, emancipation to the Jews. So there was a big dispute among the Hasidic Rebbes whether they should daven, they should be mispalel for his success or for his failure. Most of the Hasidic Rebbes felt we should daven for his success. The Jews wouldn't have to suffer and they'd be treated like equal to the Nochrim. They would have freedom and emancipation. And the Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, was opposed. He felt that this would lead to assimilation and intermarriage, etc. As it turns out, he was right. So the story goes that somehow all of the Chassidish Rebbes made up that whoever would blow shofar first on that Rosh Hashanah, his prayers would be answered. They all felt that the tkiyah shofar is a form of davening, and they have to enhance their davening either for Napoleon or against Napoleon by blowing shofar. Whoever would blow shofar first, his prayers would be answered. So they tell the story that one of the great Chassidish Rebbes told his Hasidim that year they're going to daven quickly, they're going to start at the crack of dawn, daven vasikin, leave out all the piyutim, no mishaberachs, everything is going to go quickly to make sure that their prayers would be answered, that Napoleon should be successful. When they finally, when this Rebbe rushing, when he got to the tkiyas, so he felt that he lost out already. He felt that the Litvak already beat him to it. They used to refer to the Alter Rebbe as the Litvak. They felt the Litvak beat him to it. He must have blown shofar before them, and his prayers would be answered. As it turns out, his prayers were not answered. Napoleon did win, and he gave emancipation to the Jews, and there was assimilation and intermarriage. So when this Rebbe, many months later, met up with the Alter Rebbe, so he asked him, how did you do that so, how did you daven so quickly? I had the sense that you blew shofar before us. How can it be? We started davening vasikin and we left out all the piyutim when we davened quickly. How can it be that you blew shofar before us? So the Alter Rebbe said he felt that it was so important to pray that Napoleon should lose, he blew shofar before Shachris. Our practice is that we blow shofar after Maftir, before Musaf. But the Alter Rebbe felt that it was so important to pray that Napoleon should lose. Unfortunately, Napoleon did not lose. And this emancipation shtick is what caused all the assimilation and the intermarriage. I was mentioning the other day that just 3 weeks ago I was in Berlin, and one of the couples connected with the local yeshiva there, one of the husbands realized by Shalashuda's time that there was a mistake in his ksuba. And he was very medaktik. The people there, they're very medaktik in all the dinim. He's a young married man, he has a little baby, and he realizes that you're not allowed to stay with your wife unless she has a proper ksuba. And there was a mistake on the ksuba. His wife was a gioris, and it said Bas Avraham, and it didn't say Bas Avraham Avinu. It says Bas Avraham, it sounds like her father was Jewish and his name was Avraham. If you have a gear, so he's supposed to write Bas Avraham Avinu. That's the minik. So he was very nervous. So Shabbos was over there in Berlin at 5 to 11 till we daven Ma'ariv, till we said Avdallah. Then he started Drengzach, maybe it is kosher, but he have it. And so it was around 1:30 at night, and they were making him a ksuba. There's a text, there's a normal text for a ksuba when a couple gets married. And then there's a special text for a ksuba shenimtzis beitoyis. There's a special text for a ksuba de irkiso, if the wife lost her ksuba. So there's a special text for that. And in the event that the wife didn't lose the ksuba, she still has it, but they discovered that there was a mistake in the original ksuba, which was the case over here. So there's a special text for that as well. So that special text for that ksuba was worked out, the final fine points of that text of the ksuba was worked out by the Ramami Fanu that Rav David was talking about before. And his Shalos HaTshuvos has the full text. And that's what all the later Poskim rely on his text. So I remember the Rosh Hashiva there in Berlin had this Hasek 6 months ago. Another couple, also, I think that both the husband and the wife were both Gerim. And there was some kind of mistake in their Ksuba, and they had to rewrite their Ksuba. So he had this on his computer. So he just had to change the names and the dates, and the city was the same. So it was 1:45 in the morning, Amatzoi Shabbos, 1:30, 1:45, and every time he would print out a corrected copy of this ksuba, shenimtzis batoes, so we realized there's another mistake, so we had to correct it, we print it out again, and then we realized there's another mistake, had to keep on printing it out around 4 or 5 times till we got it straight. So then, we realized something very interesting. In a normal ksuba, you refer to the husband as Ben Ploni, so-and-so, the son of so-and-so, Chassan Denan, this Chassan. And then the Kala, he mentioned the girl's name, Bas, her father's name, Bisul Tador, this girl is getting married for the first time. And here, in the text that the Rosh Hashiva had on his computer from the corrected ksuba that he did 6 months ago, both times when it has the full name of the Chassan, it says his name, his father's name, Dinan. Instead of saying Chassan Dinan, it says Dinan. So the Rosh Hashiva said he doesn't think that's a mistake. And then we checked it up later in the Chuvas of the Ramam Panu. That's the way it says in the Ramam Panu. When you're getting married, so then you under the chuppah, so you call the groom Chassan Dinan, this Chassan. You call the Kala the Sultadah. She's the Kala. But now it's already a year and a half after they got married and realized they have a mistake. So you can't refer to him as Chassan Dinan, the Chassan. He was a Chassan a year and a half ago. Now he's a husband. He's the father of their child. So you just say, Ploni ben Ploni, Dinan, this so-and-so. So the Rosh Hashiva kept on telling me, that's not a mistake. We shouldn't correct that. Don't add on the word Chassan Dinan, even though that's what we write in a normal ksuba. He said he remembers 6 months ago when he had to rewrite someone else's ksuba, there was a good reason, and that's the reason given in the Ramam Panas Chuvas. He's not a chosen now. He was a chosen a year and a half ago. Yeah, the case that was 6 months earlier, both the chosen and the kala were gerim. There's a lot of intermarriage there. No, you write the Bas Avraham Avinu by the Kala and by the Chassan Ben Avraham Avinu. On both. It should be done under the auspices of the Bezen of three, and it should be done by Yom, because you cannot convene a Bezen Balailo.
Bezin can only be convened by Yom. So I told the chassan, I told the husband of a year and a half, that we should really do this ksuba dir kesed tomorrow morning after Shachris. So he said he has no time to do it tomorrow morning because he's running to the airport. He and his wife are running to Eretz Yisrael to attend a wedding. So we had to do it at night. So we didn't have any bezin. We just had two witnesses. The Rosh Yeshiva there and the Yeshiva in Berlin and me. We were the two Edom on the Ksuba. So then I told the husband, don't tell your wife about this whole thing. Just rewrite the Ksuba and the rabbi will, the Rosh Yeshiva will hold the Ksuba for your wife. What do you have to aggravate her? She doesn't have to know that there was something wrong. So he said, it's too late. He already told her that the Ksuba was no good. She's already aggravated. She knows she needs a new Ksuba. Yeah, we were just mentioning before that the Lubavitcher, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, had a few Hasidim. Lubavitcher Rebbe had a few Hasidim who were close to Napoleon. And they knew all the secrets of what the French army was planning, where they were planning to attack, at what time, etc. So they would give over the information to the Alter Rebbe. Alter Rebbe would give it over, his Hasidim would give it over to the Russian army. Because the Rebbe was only bent on seeing to it that Napoleon should lose. So when the French finally realized that the Alter Rebbe, the Schneerson, was responsible for all of this, what? So they were out to kill him. So they were chasing after him until they finally found out that he was hiding in that he was running away from the French army. Until they found out he was hiding in a certain little village, huh? So, Rav Soloveitchik used to tell over this story. Rav Soloveitchik's father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, served as a Rav in that village, and the village was a Lubavitcher village, and his father was a Misnagid. So how come they appointed a Misnagid? So the story was, at that time, the Rav in this village was a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, a Misnagid. And the Rebbe was running away, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was running away from the French army. They were out to kill him, because they found out he was mastering all the secrets to the Russian army. So they surrounded the whole village. They were going to go from house to house to check to see where he's hiding, and they're going to catch him and kill him. So the Hasidim came to the Rav, and they knew the Rav was a Misnagid. He was opposed to all Hasidus, and especially to Lubavitch. So they asked him would he hide out the Rebbe? If the Russian army will come to his home, will he say that the Rebbe is not there? And if the French army will come to his home, he'll say the Rebbe is not there. Maybe they'll take his word for it. Maybe they won't check the whole house out. So he said he disagrees with the Lubavitcher Rebbe on his hashkafa. But he's not going to master a yid to the French. They're going to kill him for sure. So that's what happened. So they head out to the Babacher, they head out to Alter Rebbe in the basement of the Rav of the city. And then when the French soldiers came, when the general came, and he knocked on the rabbi's door, and he said, "We're looking for Schneerson. Is he hiding out? Do you know where he is?" So the Rav in the city put on a whole act, and he started screaming out loud, "Schneerson, give me that man. He's an apikiris. He's a heretic. I'll throttle him to death with my own hands. Give me the man, I'll kill him. He's ruining Judaism." So he put on such an act. So the French soldiers thought, for sure, he's not hiding out over here. He says he prepared to kill him with his own hands. So he said, okay. Look someone else. He was hiding there. So they went from house to house, and they searched all the homes. They didn't find him because he was hiding in the Rav's home. Then after a couple of days, so they gave up. They figured that Schneerson escaped. So after he came out from hiding, the Alter Rebbe made a comment, "Sometimes it's a mazel that in a Chassidish city they have a Misnagdish Rav. It worked, L'Tayvasai. So from that time on, they always appointed Misnagdim as their Rabbanim, because that was the Hatzolah of the Alter Rebbe in that city. Rav Soloveitchik said it was Chaslavich. Was that, that wasn't it? That wasn't it? A different city. Rav Nachman has a different name. Gadich. The Nado mentioned before that many of the Rabbonim who lived in Italy were doctors. Many of them were not just that they graduated medical school, many of them were practicing doctors. It wasn't, they weren't prominent Rabbonim who were professors in the medical school, and professors in the university in Padua. And it's known that the Vilna Gaon was very, as a teenager, wanted very much to go to Italy, to go to medical school, in order to understand biology better, in order to understand Hilchus Treifus. Because if you don't know biology, you can't begin to understand the laws of Hilchus Treifus. So in the introduction to the Sefer Ba'as HaShulchan, which was written by one of the students of the Vilna Gaon, he writes his whole story, that the Gaon heard from the Vilna Gaon that he wanted very much to go to Italy to study medicine, but his father wouldn't allow him to. Because his father said, if my son, Eliyahu, will go to medical school, he was such a genius, the Vilna Gaon, he'll become the world's greatest doctor, and then he'll be obligated to heal, to spend all day and all night healing all the patients. And his father didn't want him to spend time on treating cholim. His father wanted him to spend time learning Torah and paskening shailas. So it's because of his father that that he didn't allow him to go to Italy to attend medical school. Donato was talking the other day about Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. The Ramchal had already passed away by the time the Vilna Gaon got a copy of his Sefer. Ramchal wrote the Mesillas Yesharim, and he wrote other Svarim on Kabbalah. So the Vilna Gaon was extremely taken by all the Svarim, by the Mesillas Yesharim, as well as the other three Svarim on Kabbalah. So he said he had heard that the Ramchal had passed away already. He said if the Ramchal would still be alive, he would be prepared to walk to Italy by foot in order to study under him. He considered, just from the Svarim alone, he considered him such a great Goyen, especially in Kabbalah, more so in Kabbalah than in the Mesillas Yesharim. Mesillas Yesharim is all based on a passage in the Gemara, where the Gemara quotes Rav Pinchas ben Yair. Pinchas ben Yair was a Tana, but the Gemara never quotes any halachas from him. The Gemara just says he was a Bal Moifis. He was a big tzaddik, and he was a medaktik, and mitzvah is very medaktik. And the Gemara quotes his comment that when a person learns a lot of Torah, this will lead him to be as to zehiris, to be more careful about observance of mitzvahs, and zehiris will lead him to zrizis, to be more eager to fulfill mitzvahs, and this will lead to nikiyas, to be. Nikias means cleanliness and observance of mitzvahs, and Nikias will lead to Prishas, and Prishas will lead to Chasidus, and Chasidus will lead to Anova, and to Yerushamayim, and to Tchias HaMesim. So the whole Mesillas Yesharim is one long essay to explain what are these various concepts. What's the definition of Zahiris, and what's the definition of Zrizus, and what's the definition of Nikias? The longest chapter is the chapter Perek Yud Aleph on the Kiyus, where he gives you what the definition is, and it goes on pages and pages and pages, gives you many examples how you have to fulfill mitzvahs in a fashion of Nikiyus. It's very famous. There was an apikoiris many years after, in the 1900s, there was an apikoiris who was known as Achad Ha'am. That was his pen name. His real name was Ginsberg. So he used to write essays in Hebrew. So he has a famous essay, Al HaPrishus, all about Prishus. Is it proper to be an ascetic to stay away from all the worldly pleasures, or is it more correct to enjoy Olam Hazeh? So the whole essay is mamas plagiarized line by line from the Mesillas Yesharim. The audience that Achad Ha'am used to present his, used to read papers to each other. So he delivered his paper al Aprishas to an audience who never looked in the Mesillas Yesharim. So his essay, Achad Ha'am's essay, is line by line every Maimah Chazal and every Pasuk exactly in the same order that the Ramchal has it. That's how Achad Ha'am has it. Many years ago, 50 years ago, there was a conservative rabbi who published a whole book on Achad Ha'am, showing that many of his essays were plagiarized from essays written by sociologists in other languages, written in French and written in Latin, and the people to whom Achad Ha'am would deliver his papers were not familiar with the other languages. So they didn't realize that these essays were all plagiarized. They thought that it was all Achad Ha'am's original ideas. And this one was also plagiarized. The essay Al Aprishas is also gegampet. University, and he functions as a rabbi in a shul in a Sfardish and Minyan in Riverdale, and he just came to Italy now. Every so often he comes to supervise the manufacturing of the kosher wines. So he was telling me that in the 1700s they had this big dispute, and it was ongoing in the 1800s, 1900s, every generation they have this big dispute about the kashrus of the sturgeon, because they want to manufacture the sturgeon fish. They want to manufacture caviar. He comes to give hashgacha on caviar and on wines. So he says the caviar that's made from the eggs of the kosher fish does not taste so good. Caviar that's made from the eggs of the trefa fish, apparently those who eat it claim that it tastes better. So the shaila was, is it permissible to make caviar from the eggs of the sturgeon? What's the shaila? To determine that any given fish is kosher, you have to have fins and scales. That's all. You don't need any tradition. You don't need any masorah. That's how the son of the Rosh writes in one of his truest, Rabbi Yehuda ben Arosh, the brother of the tour. You don't need a masorah. There are tens and thousands of various kinds of fish. It's not shaykh to require a masorah on fish. As long as you have fins and scales, then you know the fish is kosher. So the Ramban, in his commentary on Chumash, writes an original chiddush that scales are only a siman of kashrus of the fish if the scales are attached only on one side. And you can take a knife and scrape the fish in one direction and remove all of the scales. And the sturgeon has scales, but the scales are attached on both sides. In order to remove them, you would have to put a knife under the scale and yank it out, like putting a screwdriver under and to yank out the scales. So this is the chiddush of the Ramban, and not everybody is in agreement that we should paskan like the Ramban. So apparently in the 1700s, this was written up by the Pachad Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Lamprenti. He writes, but this was a machlekes between the various kelas. I think one of them was taka manatova, the other one was some other kela, whether they should allow the sturgeon or not. Then in the 1800s, this was machlekes was repeated again. At the beginning of the Reform movement, one of the early Orthodox rabbis who became a Reform rabbi, at the beginning there were no Reform rabbis. So one of the early rabbis was nicknamed by the other rabbanim, Acher. In the days of the Tanoim, There was a Tana, Elisha ben Avuya. He's quoted in Pirkei Avos, quoted in other places. And he later on lost his emuna. He became an apikairus, Elisha ben Avuya. So he was nicknamed Acher, an outsider. And he heard the Baskol, Elisha ben Avuya heard a Baskol come out from heaven, Shuba Bonim Shavavim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepts everybody's tshuva except for Acher. He decided he's Acher. He's gone too far and his tshuva wouldn't be accepted. So just like in the days of the Tanaim, they used to refer to Elisha ben Avuya, the Apikairis, as Acher, so the Orthodox rabbi who became Reform in the days of the Chasam Sofer was also nicknamed Acher. Why did they call him Acher? Because when he used to sign off, his name was Aharon Chariner Rabiner. So the Rashi Tevis is Acher. Aharon Chariner, that was his name, and Rabiner was his title. So the Chasam Sofer always refers to him as Acher. That's the Rashi Tevis of his name. So originally when he was still an Orthodox rabbi, before he officially became Reform, whatever that meant at that time, he's probably more Frum than the modern Orthodox are today. At that time, that was considered Reform. So he always insisted that the sturgeon is kosher. And then the other Rabbanim disagreed. He said, we don't have to follow this Ramban. The sturgeon has fins and scales, so it's kosher. And not everybody agrees with the Ramban. So later, when he became a Reform rabbi, so the other Orthodox rabbi said, you see, I told you all along he was an apikairus. He said the sturgeon was kosher. That was the Reform rabbi Shabo was speaking. And then in the 1900s, the machlekes was repeated again in America. Originally, the conservatives, the Reform, never kept kosher at all. The conservatives, years ago, used to keep kosher, officially, and they used to have certain kulas. So one of the kulas we were talking the other day, one of the kulas was that they permitted stam yenam, wine that's manufactured by Nochrim, based on a misquotation from the Tshuvas HaRamah. The Ramah says about the Jews in Italy, because the water was polluted, and it was difficult, you couldn't eat a meal with, you couldn't drink any water, you had to drink something, so because of Chayi Nefesh, so the Jews in Italy were used to drinking Stam Yenem, and they thought that maybe it's mutter. So the Ramah says, even though they're wrong, even though it's Aser, but you can't consider them Chosher Al Adavar, so if they manufacture kosher wine, and they tell us that there was no Maga Nachri, we can accept, we can take their word for it. So that was the Tshuvas HaRamah that the conservatives misquoted about 50 years ago when they came out with their psak. You're allowed to drink wine manufactured by Nachrim. So they quoted this in the name of the Ramah. So years ago, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, the conservatives held officially from Kashrus. And their chiddush was that sturgeon is kosher, that you don't have to follow the Ramban. So this was a debate that began in the 1700s. They were writing about it. And Rabbi Yehuda has tshuvas about it also in the 1700s. And the Pachad Yitzchak had this. It was a big split between the various communities here in Italy. Then in the 1800s, the beginning of the Reform movement, then in the 1900s, and the conservative movement. An ongoing debate whether the sturgeon is kosher or not. Earlier periods, in the days of the Rishonim, was Rabbeinu Yeshaya Ditrani. And he was so famous during his lifetime, the Nada pointed out that the Orza Ruah, who lived one after the other, and the whole letter is printed in the Sefer Orza Ruah. Long, long letter, and after each Shaila, he gives you the response that the Rabbeinu Yeshaya Ditrani sent him. Very interesting. So he accepted Dor Zarua from Vienna accepted, he submitted his shilas to this Italian prominent gadol, Rabbi Shai Detrani. He accepted all of the psakim except for one. He writes, he can't accept as kula because the tradition by the German Jews was always lahachmir. It's an issue that many people don't observe today. There was a big machlokes in the days of the Tanoim. The mikvahs used to be filthy. So a person, because they had no way of cleaning the water. So if you have 100 people use the same mikveh, so it's, the water is absolutely filthy. They had no filter, they had no way to clean it. So the practice used to be in the days of the Tanaim, after someone would go to mikveh, they would be filthy, so they would have to take a shower afterwards. So after a while, the people thought, well, what do I need to dip in the dirty water for? Let me just take the shower. I don't need the dirty water. So people thought, lo elamitarim, elamitarim, the dirty water doesn't bring me purification. The clean shower cleanses the body. So they stopped going to the mikveh, and the shower was all maim shuvim. It's puzzle for tefillah. It was no good. So the Tanoim made gzeira derabanan that even if a person is tohor, even if a person goes to the mikveh and he takes a shower the same day, this undoes the tefillah in the mikveh. It is considered as if he's still tamei. So the question was, does this apply to women or not? This chumrah was introduced in the days of the Tanaim with respect to someone who's going to mikveh to remove tumah. When a married woman goes to mikveh, it's not to remove the tumah, it's to be muteris lebaila. So do you have the same chumrah? That if a woman goes to the mikveh and then she takes a shower afterwards and undoes the tefillah in the mikveh? So the Or Zeruah sent in his shaila, this is one of the 14 shailas that he has the Taisus Rid, Rabbi Shai Detrani. So in his Shaila, he presents it that this prominent Ashkenazi rabbi, and this prominent, all the prominent Ashkenazi rabbis said, L'chumra, that if a woman takes a shower afterwards on the same day, before Harif Shemesh, before the sun goes down the next day, so this undoes the Tvila, and there was a minority opinion not so. So the Taisus Rid, the rabbi from Italy, made fun of the whole thing. He said, that's ridiculous. That's only for Tumah V'Tahara. It doesn't apply Labayla. So the Or Zeruah writes, on this issue, even though I submitted the 14 shilas to this prominent rabbi in Italy, and my intention was to accept his opinion, but on this issue, I realized I can't accept his opinion. I have to be machmir, because that was always a tradition by the German Jews. This was a tradition from the days of Rashi and Taisus, that a woman shouldn't take a shower on the same day. So on the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah quotes this. The Ramah presents all the chumras of the Ashkenazim. So the Ramah quotes this chumra. It's interesting, this Taisus Rid, this Rabbeinu Yishai of Trani, had a grandson who had the same name, Yishai of Trani. So the grandson was known as Rabbeinu Yishai Achron Zal. Rashi Tevis Reish Yud Aleph Zayin. Rabbeinu Yishai Achron Zal. When you study on the side of the Rif, you have printed the Shilta Giborim. So the Shilta Giborim will often quote the Riaz. That's not the Rashi Tevis Rabbeinu Yitzchak Or Zeruah from Vienna, who corresponded with his grandfather. That's the Rashi Tevis of the grandson of the Taisus Rid, Rabbeinu Yishai Achron Zal, also Rabbeinu Yishai Detrani, also lived in Italy. And the Shach writes in Yerideya that some of the earlier poskim confused the two. They thought that this person, Riaz, whenever this Rashi Tevis appears, is the same person. So they had kashas. How come over here he's quoted as saying like this, and there he's quoted as saying faker? The Shach points out that it's a confusion. They're two different people with the same Rashi Tevis. One is Rabbeinu Yitzchak Or Zeruah, who corresponded. He lived in Vienna, and he corresponded with the grandfather of the Riaz. The other one was the Rashi Tevis Rabbeinu Yishai Achron Zal, the grandson of the Taisus Rid, who lived in Italy and followed all the Italian traditions.
Oh, if she
referred to it as Shmona Esrei on the assumption that it has 18 brachas. If you look through the Shmona Esrei, it has 19 brachas. So how come we refer to it as 18, the Shmona Esrei? So it's usually assumed that originally the tefillah only had 18 brachas, and then there was a point in history when Shmuel HaKatan, one of the Tanoim, was asked to compose the tefillah of Olam Alshinim. Olam Alshinim is a special tefillah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should spare us from the evils of the Yiddish Apikursim. Olam Alshinim goes on the Yiddish Apikursim. This Elisha ben Avuya, it was really against him. Elisha ben Avuya masad to the Romans how to ruin Judaism, and there were others also in the days of the Tanoim who were mastering to the Romans how to destroy the Jewish religion. The Romans were trying to figure out how to break the Jewish revolt, so they made gzeris against Bris Mila and against Shabbos and against Mikveh and so on. This was at the advice, this was at the recommendation of Yiddish Apikursim. So they composed this tefillah of Olam Alshinim at that time, mainly against the Yiddish Apikursim. So that was in the days of the Tanoim. That was in the days right after the time of the Churban Abayis, after the Churban Abayis. So how come we still refer to the tefillah as Shmoyne Esrei? It's already been 19 brachas for so many centuries. Someone should have already changed the name. So this Rabbeinu Yishaya Detrani has a famous suggestion that they quote in the history books. It's in his commentary on the Gemara in the end of Tainus. He says, originally he claims there were 17 brachas. And then when the Shmuel HaKatan, the Tana Shmuel HaKatan, composed the Tefillah of Olam Alshinim, they called it Shmoyne Esrei. There were 18 brachas. And it was way, way later, in the Middle Ages, that they added on the other bracha. Which was the other bracha? So he quotes from the Talmud Yerushalmi, and he quotes a Tosefta, that you have an option of saying, Vil Yerushalayim Ircha Berachamim Toshuv. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to rebuild Yerushalayim. And then we have a bracha, Tzemach David Avducha Meheres Atzmiach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should reestablish Malchus Beis David by bringing the Melech HaMashiach. Melech HaMashiach will be from the Malchus Beis David. So the Tosefta, quoted in the Yerushalmi, says that this is optional. If you want, you can include the both themes into one bracha. And if you want to, you can break it up into two brachas. We have it in two different brachas. Yishalayim Mircha Berachim Toshuv. Then we say also, B'chisei David Avducha Meheira L'Soicha Tochin. We really include Kisei David Avducha, Malchus Beis David, Melech HaMashiach, in the bracha of Yerushalayim. So by us is problematic. That's a major problem. Why we mentioned already Malchus Beis David in the Yerushalayim Mircha, so why do we say as a separate bracha, Stemach David Avducha? So that's a major problem. Okay. But the Yerushalmi and the Tosefta say this is optional. If you want, you can say these as one bracha, can combine the two themes together, because the complete status of Yerushalayim is only when you have a melech from the Malchus Beis David there. So it's really one and the same theme. Or if you want, you can split the themes up and recite them in two different brachas. So this Taisus Rid, this Rabbeinu Yishaya Detrani, writes in his commentary, look at the piyutim that we recite on Purim. In some shuls, they still recite the krevets, the piyutim on Purim. In Shulchan Aruch, it says it's called krevets. The word krevets doesn't exist as a word. It's a Rosh HaTevis, Kolorini V'Yeshua V'Yohalei Tzadikim. Krevets is the nickname that we give to the piyutim that we recite on Purim in the Chazaras Hashatz of Shachris. When the Chazan repeats the Shmoneh Esrei of Shachris on Purim out loud, so you add a paragraph into each one of the brachas. So you have printed in, you look in any regular siddur, you have a paragraph added for every single bracha
except for Estemach David Avdecha. Why? So Rabbi Shai Detrani says, because the one who composed the piyutim till the middle of the Middle Ages, they only said 18 brachas. They didn't have 19 brachas. With Balaam al-Shinim, they had 18 brachas. He claims originally there were 17 brachas. When Shmuel HaKatan composed Balaam al-Shinim, then it became their 18 brachas, and that's when we started referring to it as the Shmona Esrei. It was only in the later years, because it was optional, either to recite as two separate brachas, or to recite as one bracha, so in the later generations, in the days of the Rishonim, that's when they decided to make it into 19 brachas, to choose that option. So that's why we still refer to the tefillah as the Shmona Esrei, because until very recently, the taka were only 18 brachas. There were not 19 brachas. It's a very fascinating suggestion that he gives, but it's against the Gemara. Gemara said the Feirish not so. See, that's a problem. Donato mentioned before Rabbi Zaria Minho Adoimim. He has suggestions. He makes a suggestion that maybe the Chachmei HaGemara made a mistake in history. So today you have people are considered Orthodox and they say the Gemara made a mistake in history. You have a lot of people say like that. How long was the period of the Bayis Sheni? The Bayis Rishon says in Tanakh lasted for 410 years. The Bayis Sheni, there's no Tanakh. So the Talmud has a historical tradition. The Bayis Sheni lasted 420 years. According to the Goyish history books, there's 150 years missing there. Bayis Sheni was way more than 420 years. So this is a big dispute in the days of the Rishonim. How do you deal with this? So Rabbi Nizrachi Halevi has a commentary that's printed on the bottom of the Rif in all the normal Gemaras. So Rabbi Nizrachi Halevi writes in the beginning of Maseches Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara there says, the Gemara is speaking about Psukim and Tanakh, about the various kings who ruled over Persia in the beginning of the period of this, the second Beis HaMikdash, the Bayis Sheni period. So the Gemara says that this name and that name and the other name and the other, they're all the same person. They're all the same king. Rabbi Nizrachi Halevi writes that it's a well-known fact that in the Goyish history books, these were different people. These were different kings. They weren't all the same person. There are many years missing in the Gemara's calculation of the Bayis Sheni period. It's much more than 420 years. That's Rabbi Nizrachi Halevi writes. The Ravid, the famous Ravid who wrote his comments on the Rambam, the Ravid often disagrees with the Rambam. So the Ravid learned Bechavrusa with the Rabbi Nizrachi Halevi. So he has a running commentary on the Sefer Hamor, on all the comments of the Rabbi Nizrachi Halevi. Usually he disagrees with everything that he says, and if he doesn't disagree, then he says he gambled it for me. It was my shtickle Torah, gone for me, iti. He stole it from me. So here, he disagrees with his chavrusa, Rabbi Nizrachi Halevi, and he says, what kind of shekits is he? How can you say that the Gemara is wrong? The Gemara says the Bayis Sheni was 420 years, so shine. So this is an ongoing debate. And in 70 years ago, before the Second World War, some of the Rabbanim in Europe wrote in their Svarim, it's a well-known fact, that the Bayis Sheni was much more than 420 years. It was 150 years missing there. It was much more than 420 years. And Rabbi Schwab, Zichrono Livracha, from Washington Heights, also published such an essay. Bayis Sheni was way more than 420 years, and the Chachamim were concealing the missing 150 years on purpose, intentionally. He gives a whole historical suggestion. And others, like the Chazon Ish, think, no, the Gemara says 420 years is 420 years, and the Goyish history books are wrong. Yeah, but we're used to this already. When Rabbeinu Azariah min Adomim, Azariah de Rossi, when he came out with his Sefer Mori Noyim, he wrote that the Gemara, Donato mentioned before that in the second edition, they forced him to leave out those four pages. When he came out with that book, and he says that maybe the Chachmei HaGemara were wrong in history, didn't say they're wrong in halacha. He said in history. No, they're not mechuyev to be experts in history. So because he said that, so many rabbonim were so upset. They wanted to make a cherem against him. I think they did make a cherem. I'm not sure. In fact, they write that Rabbi Yosef Karo was shown. Rabbi Yosef Karo lived in Eretz Yisrael, in Tzfat. They showed Rabbi Yosef Karo the questionable pages, and he asked one of the other rabbonim to write a cherem, and he'll sign it. Mazel was that he passed away before he signed it. So the others who were there, the Al-Sheikh, wrote, Rabbi Yosef Karo told me that someone else was going to write the cherem. He told me he was going to sign it. And others also write he was going to sign it. They were so upset about this. Today, everybody's used to this. We assume that the Gemara is not necessarily experts on history. The Gemara can make mistakes in history. Today, it's not assumed to be habikursish, to say. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, where the Gemara says about one Amora. The Amoraim lived a few centuries after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says you can only administer Dinei Nefashis, Bezdin. You need a Bezdin of 23 who have Smicha. And Smicha can only be conferred in Eretz Yisrael. So you need a Bezdin of 23 to administer Dinei Nefashis, the death penalty. It can only be Bezmancha Beis HaMikdash HaYakayim. You cannot administer Din in the Nefashis. So centuries after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara records that there was an Amora who put someone to death thinking that he's doing the right thing. He's administering Din in the Nefashis. So the Gemara says, Gevald, he made a mistake. You're not allowed to administer Din in the Nefashis Bizman Hazeh. And he gave, there are four forms of Mises Bezen, Skila, Srefa, Herig, and Chenek. So he gave Srefa, and he burnt the person at the stake. So the Gemara says, that's wrong. Srefa is a different form of Srefa. You don't burn the person alive. The Mishnah, you say, you have to take hot lead, liquefied lead, and pour it down the person's throat, and you burn out the kishkas, and that's how the person dies. That's considered a more elegant way of srefa. That's based on the pasuk Yahavta l'racha kamoicha bror lo misa yofa. Instead of burning a person alive, one who deserves the death penalty of srefa, so you burn the liquefied lead, the molten lead down his throat. So this Amora, the Gemara says, made two mistakes. Number one, he lived centuries after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and there's no longer any din in the fashas. Number two, he did the Srefa incorrectly. So that's how it says in the Gemara. He made two mistakes. So that Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Nun Beis is a famous comment of the Maharshal in the back of all the editions of the Gemara in the bottom of the page of the Maharshal. Maharshal lived in the 1500s. Maharshal was a cousin of the Ramah, cousin of the Maharam Padua. So the Maharshal lived in Poland. So he writes, he doesn't think that he made a mistake. He says, the halacha says that the bezin has the right to administer lohayra shah, l'migda milsa. Bezin has the right to administer any punishment that they think is necessary lohayra shah. But they should be careful that people shouldn't think that they're really administering Mises bezin. So he says, the one mistake explains the other mistake. The Amora didn't make a mistake. He burnt the person alive because this is not the correct form of administering Srefa, because he knew that he lived after the Churban HaBayis, and he's not allowed to administer official Mises Bezdin. So that's why he gave the Einish of Srefa Shaloi Kedin. So then the Maharshal adds on, Ve'ineni kecholik ala Gemara chas v'sholem. Don't consider me an apikoros that I'm disagreeing with the Gemara. He says, I'm disagreeing with the Gemara on history. The Gemara thinks that the Amora make two mistakes, and I think that one mistake far emphasizes the other mistake. So whenever Bez the Makam the Onshin, Shaloi Manadin, they have to do it in such a way that no one should think that they're really giving the real Mises Bez. So that's a famous passage in the Marshal that all the later commentaries quote. That the Marshal thinks that there's nothing wrong with disagreeing with the Gemara on a historical point. So that's what today, if Derasi would have printed his, Azaria Derasi would have printed his sefer today, no one would have been so excited about it. But at the time that it was printed, it made such a hullabaloo. Woof. They write in the history books that they, I don't know, I never read the whole story, they write that they insisted, they wanted the Ramami Panu to sign along on the Cherem. I don't know if he did.